change in the U.S. The presidential nominating convention will be held Saturday afternoon and include keynote speeches by Cornel West and Yana Indigo, a leader in the Bernie or Bust movement. You can register for the convention at the door or attend without needing to register the welcoming event on Thursday evening at 7 p.m. or the Party for the Revolution, a real party.
The unruffled beat of Clouds Below Your Knees by Ray Lynch signals Thursday, 10 p.m., a time for So What's Your Story, the coolest place on your dial because it's the only program originating in Houston that is devoted entirely to storytelling right here on listener-sponsored KPFT 90.1 FM. I'm your host, Dr. Hank Rubicek, professor of communication at the University of Houston downtown, and every week, along with Greg, Warren, Mary, and newly minted interns Nicole and Alondra, we celebrate the power of story by showcasing the talent that floods our community. You know, before we get started, last week, thanks to Alondra not getting my word that we were preempted at 10 by Hillary, we did an impromptu program at 10:30 Scooter Spot, but I failed to thank some of our wonderful listeners for their generous donations during our summer sizzle. Nicole, would you please do the honors?
Absolutely. Thank you to Jennifer, who said on her pledge form, "To my boyfriend, Bob Edwards." And thank you, Phil, who said, "KPFT means knowledge professionally forwarded triumphantly." And thank you, Jer, John, to our own Warren and Marcia for their generous donation.
Yeah, Warren and Marcia are just, they're wonderful. Warren, of course, is our own Dr. Warren Holloman right here and at KPFT and our wonderful host. And thank you so much to all of you, Jerry, John. You guys are great. Thank you, Nicole. You know, professional tellers do grace this studio, but most of our tellers are common folks with uncommon stories to tell. Poignant narratives drawn from sifting through life's trajectories, placing the spotlight on that one event, that one face, or the enchanted fairy tale or waggish folktale. Regardless of genre, our guests connect with you on a special level. With this connection taking place, the teller becomes an agent not of performance, but of authenticity. And I've got the kind of teller just like that sitting right next to me right now. Ariana Rose revealed her signature romantically rhythmic style when she was here about 1 year ago on July 16th. A teller unafraid to break the boundaries of imagination, Ariana is a model of engagement, disarming and captivating listeners with her medley of tools of expression. She's also professionally ambidextrous, as her vocations and avocations include English teacher, private detective, web designer, and pharmaceutical rep, just to name a few. However, it is Ariana's love of story that catapults her into the category of storyteller incarnate. Moth Story Slam winner, world traveler, and a person I'm proud to call my friend, Ariana Rose. Thank you for being here again.
Thank you for
having
me. It's
been a whole year, right?
Yes.
And now, you know, you're 28 and I'm 21, and we're so much older now, right? It's so great.
No, I'm 21, you're
28. You're 21, okay, whatever it might be. It is so wonderful. It really rocks that you're here. Thank you so much. How are you feeling? Because I know you had surgery, right?
I'm feeling great now. I can jump with my broken ex-broken foot.
Yeah, right. Greg and I were responding earlier that we saw you at the Story Slam. You were in a wheelchair, right?
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And I have to tell you something. This is no laughing matter. It's hard enough to get up there in front of 1,700 people. But when you're rolling up there in a wheelchair and you really don't have the kind of latitude of animation and gesturing that you typically do, mm-hmm. you have to make some adjustments, and you really wowed us for a lot of reasons. I just wanted you to know that. I've had the good fortune to be part of your audience on a few occasions, and I love your style. I characterize it, as you heard me a moment ago, as romantically rhythmic, because in my mind you tend to convey sentimental landscapes retrenched in devotion, loyalty, and tenderness. Does that kind of characteristic resonate with you? Am I on target, or what do you think?
Loyalty and devotion, yes, definitely.
Okay. And the others,
what
do you
think? The tenderness, no.
You don't think that you don't think you communicate tenderness in your stories?
I can if I have to. Actually, I would say a style that's drenched in whatever it takes to convey the
feeling.
Whatever
it takes to convey, yeah. Well, you have a plethora of emotions, and if you were an artist, and you were, and if you were a painter, you'd have more colors than anybody could ever imagine. Mm. You really, it's a symphony of pastels whenever we listen to your stories. You've journeyed extensively, Arianna. You live in France, and you're so skilled at blending love and travel in narrative form, making them curiously similar, because each of them take on an interesting detour and sometimes lead us to unpredictable consequences. Mm-hmm. And the story that you have for us tonight is an example of this. Traveling with a bad star and a shining star, your daughter, I coined that one, mm-hmm. and the transformation that came with it. And I know your story tonight is in two parts, and I'd like to know if there's anything that we need to know before you tell us the story, any kind of background stuff.
Well, it does. I did live in France at that time. And I do beg for tolerance, because traveling in a foreign territory is something that you choose to get out of a normal setting to explore. And as I discovered the good, the bad, and the ugly, it changed me.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm already begging for forgiveness.
Wow. We're looking forward to your story.
Okay. So tonight I'm going to share with you a particularly ferocious adrenaline rush I had when traveling for the first time as a family with my husband, Fabian, and my 7-month-old daughter, Shade. It's 1986. We live in France, and we decide for a big vacation, Colombia to see my family, Mexico, and the USA. Now, I do have to say that right before we're boarding, at that moment, I'm telling my husband how an Indian fellow had said to me, if you hear someone sneeze just before you get on the plane, then don't do it. It's very bad luck. And just when I said that, someone sneezed, and we both looked at each other and just laughed. So my first mistake was traveling with a U.S. passport, because I had forgotten that in Colombia, the U.S. citizens were required to have a visa, whereas the French were not. So when we went through security, they took me and my baby into a room that was to become my hotel for the next 36 hours. My father immediately set out to do what he could do. My French husband, who was a very affluent man in France, thought he'd impress the security officers by showing them that he was the sole owner of a chateau. It never dawned on him that at that moment, Colombia was a very corrupted country, so it backfired on him. They were so impressed that it almost cost us all our traveling money. Had it not been for my father, who shows up with the release form telling us that a cousin of a cousin of a cousin was el jefe, the chief, and that he had made a call ordering them to return to us everything and to set us free immediately. So after 36 hours, we're finally free, and we all head to my dad's hometown. And Fabian, so eager to express his gratefulness, brings my dad his gifts, 4 bottles of Moët et Chardon Dom Pérignon. And so I don't know how much this champagne costs, but it's something like $300 to $400 a bottle. And my father is not someone to be impressed with that sort of thing. So he's kind of a jolly man, and he invites everyone, all the neighbors, to come over, who all show up with plastic glasses, and they start drinking the champagne as if it was Coca-Cola. And I looked at my refined, well-mannered French husband, and he had this disgruntled look on his face. I told you not to bring anything like that. You should have brought some regular wine. And he was so wounded. So the day before we left Colombia, my brother takes him to Sierra Nevada on a donkey. He comes back limping from a fall. And by that time, I begin to be exhausted of all these culture shock mediations that I'm doing. So when we finally left to go to Mexico, we're in really like a need of relaxation. So once we land in Merida, my husband bought a bottle of water for the baby. About 2 hours later, Shade, my daughter, began vomiting, and then diarrhea followed. And all I could do was ask what happened. I had been monitoring everything, And Fabien revealed to me at that moment that he had bought a bottle of water from a young boy at the station. So we rushed her to the hospital. The water bottle, the water in the bottle was tap water, and they started her on antibiotics, but she wouldn't respond to the treatment. At that moment, they put her naked in a super cold room and the temperature to keep her temperature down, but she was continued to dwindle and dwindle until slowly and surely, about 2 days later, the glossiness in her eyes was lost. Her eyes were like dull. And after 4 days, the doctors just told her they couldn't do anything for her. She had lost like 5 pounds, which is enormous for a baby. And, oh, wow. Immediately, we filed for repatriation, and we set up the plane, the doctor, and the hospital in France. And I was devastated, literally devastated. At one moment, I took Shade and I held her to my bosom, and all of a sudden, she looked at me. And my heart skipped a beat. It was a sign of life that she had not given in days. So I called everybody, and everybody comes running in, and turns out she's going to make it. The doctors in France advised her to let her recuperate fully before we're going back. So we decided that once we were out of the hospital, we would go chill out in an island of Isla Mujeres. So there was something else that was really bugging me. Fabien kept on wanting to go see the pyramids while Shade was in the hospital. Oh, yeah. And did I tell you that I was 3 months pregnant? Okay, so I was mother to the core. At that moment, when he said that one more time that he wanted to go to the pyramids, I just leashed out. Just go on your own. I've seen them already. I've climbed them. I've eaten on them. I've took pictures of them. I made love on them. I probably flew off of them in another life. Just go. You know, I just wanted to be alone with my child. And that was when my process of becoming the Incredible Hulk really started. Until then, I had only been in pain, but now I was going to be shifting into another type of emotion. So Shade is fully recovered. We're on our way to Isla Mujeres. We missed the last ferry, so we reserved a so-called four-star hotel by the ferry, the only hotel. When we got to our room, the AC was down, and 10 minutes later, there's no electricity. There were no more vacant rooms. It's 11 p.m., and I'm really concerned for Shade due to the heat, but we had nowhere else to go.
Wow. You know, it's interesting because the kind of image that a parent, especially a mother, I think, can paint of her child is really unmatched. You know, when you're painting a picture mm-hmm. of that, of your daughter, saying that, but what did you say? You said that you saw something that you didn't think life would show her. What was that you said?
She looked at me.
Looked at you, and what did you say about...
It was the first sign of life.
First sign of life.
For days that she had given, because the gloss of her eyes were gone, and her eyes were like looking... lost. They mm-hmm. were lost. Mm-hmm. So she mm-hmm. looked at me. That was awesome. That was
Yeah, it's a kind of image that I think mothers know best, literally. Mm-hmm. This is Hank Rubicek with Nicole Grady and Alondra Mejia, and you are listening to my guest storyteller, Ariana Rose, on So What's Your Story? Only on Corporate Free, KPFT, 90.1 Houston, 89.5 in Galveston and 90.3 in Livingston. Okay, so we left off at the four-star slum, right? Four-star slum, the ultimate oxymoron, right? Take us to the rest of the story.
So
Take us on the rest of this incredible journey.
I find myself in this horrible hotel. No light, no electricity. It's hot, humid. I'm so worried about Shade. I'm monitoring her all through the night. And at some time before sunrise, I looked over at her tiny body and I see this giant roach creeping up towards my daughter. Oh my God, it was 5 inches long. I am not exaggerating. Now this roach is called a Blabberus giganteus. It exists, and it exists in Mexico. So I hit the roach with the back of my hand so hard, it landed against a mirror on the wall. And there, in the midst of my emotional anger, I watched that roach slide down the mirror in slow motion. And my brain just shifted. And I thought, wow, that's one of those female roaches I've heard about. She just had to look at herself in the mirror one more time. And suddenly, I just like snap out of it. And I just And the fury that I'm in a fury, and at the same time, it's like my brain's going crazy. I wake up Fabian, I tell him to get dressed, I pick up my daughter. Now, this is probably the first time that I give an order to my husband. Our roles have totally switched. And as we're walking out the front office, the receptionist wakes up, and she tells me to pay before, and he tells me to pay before leaving. Huh? Because you call this service? You'll have to walk over my dead body if I give you a dime. So out we go. Now, I don't know where we're going. And about 200 feet later, a police car drives up and a cop walks out. And my brain shifts again. And I don't know if you've ever seen people that remind you of animals. Well, this guy reminded me of a chihuahua. He had bulging eyes and a cute little snout. And he tells me that unless we pay, we'll have to go with him. Well, let's go. And off to the police station we went. Now, by that time, my powerful, dominant husband is totally undone. He doesn't speak Spanish. He's at my mercy. And after an hour of waiting, the head honcho calls us into the room and tells us that we have to pay. But my undergrowing process of the Incredible Hulk is not about to pay a dime. So I explain to him my situation, and I tell him that I have a right to make a call, and he refused. Okay. Well, do you have a pen? Please? And I write down 10 numbers, sort of like a throw of the dice, and I tell him, that's my uncle's number. He's the Ministro de la Suprema Corte de Justicia de México, a minister of the Supreme Court of Mexico. I demand that you call him immediately and tell him that his niece is here and tell him why. Now, I have no idea if there's even a Supreme Court or even a minister for all I know, but the micro discomposure of his face told me that I had hit bullseye. In a very polite tone, he says, no need to get upset, señora. We're just doing our job. So he sends me to the front, and the Chihuahua cop starts guiding us out. And I could tell that he's furious. He's leading us out down a hall, and he opens a door, and he says, after you. And I'm about to walk in and take a step to go inside. And Shade is in my arms, and suddenly I just feel like a thump in my chest that stopped me. And I looked inside the room, and I realized it was a jail room, and that the door had bars on it. Oh, I could just feel the fumes coming out of my nostrils. You really think I'm an idiot, don't you? I turned around and I started walking out of the police station, and they follow me all the way, and once outside, they stop me. The hotel guy starts yapping again, and he's claiming his money, and at that moment, my exhausted husband reaches into his pocket and gives him a $5 bill. Damn! Now I've got to say something to save face, so I just, like, that's for the laundry, and I start walking away again. This time, the Chihuahua cop blocks me, and oh, now the Incredible Hulk is like 100% download, and I'm complete. Honestly, I was afraid of me. There's a moment when anger is the only weapon you have, but it's more powerful than any machine gun because the authority that it carries is beyond the physical. I remember closing my eyes and lifting my arm like straight up as if I was saluting, and I forbade myself from looking at him because I knew that with just one look I was going to laser him to death. And I said, you are guilty of having thought that my daughter's life had no value, and for that I will crush you. And I took this huge breath, and I opened my eyes. They were both running away as fast as their little legs could carry them. And my flabbergasted husband was just livid. And I'm like, okay, now where's that Red Sea? Damn it, just bring it on. So, 4 hours later, we're in Isla Mujeres. At last, our 4 days of bliss. On day 5, Fabian wants to go windsurfing. And after 4 hours, he's not back yet. So I began to worry, and I talked to the lifeguards. No one has seen him. When the coast guards found him, it turned out he had lost control. He had wandered into the sea, and he couldn't get back. Extenuated, he had just given up. That was it. Culture shock had done its toll. He looks at me and he says, let's go home. So to accelerate our return, we still needed to go through the USA, but we needed to change airlines and airport. So we passed. In the U.S., I passed like a breeze through customs, but Fabian this time was stuck because that word Colombia stamped in his passport cost us 2 hours of search for drugs. They came and got me. They took my suitcase. They took out everything. They took out the baby's carriage. They hit the tubes for a hollow sound. They scratched all the decorations we had bought. They sprawled out everything, every centimeter of things in our suitcases. When it was over, we rushed to the other airport, made our way through the crowds, and finally settled in the plane. Shade is perfectly calm. Fabian and I look at each other and just, whew, wow. And as God is my witness, I hear the words, "Ladies and gentlemen, this is your captain speaking. Please leave all your belongings in the plane and come out as quickly and calmly as possible." Total silence everywhere. You guessed it, bomb alert.
Beautiful. God, that was a great story. That really was a great story. You had all the ingredients in there. I love that ending. You know, I always talk about the fact that that stories are really things that people take us on. They're journeys. Mm-hmm. And a good storyteller takes us on this journey, and they return us safely to the present, and that's exactly what you did. But I have to tell you something. You insulted my child, and, you know, Greg probably knows what I'm going to say. But here's a picture of Simon, my chihuahua. There's no bulging eyes here, right? Greg, come on, look at this. Look, right there. That's him, just letting you know.
This is a mixture, definitely.
That's not a mixture. Oh, no, it is not a mixture. You see, she's already insulting my child.
They have those little Mexican
chihuahuas. You came on twice. That's fine. You don't have to come on again. You're insulting my child. No, that is a long-haired chihuahua. I realize that he's gorgeous because he looks like me a little bit.
Oh, but I did say that he had a cute little snout.
Yeah, Yeah, try to get out of this, you know. Try to get out of this. Yeah, see if you get out of it. The other thing is, you know, this was a marvelous story, and there are things... I even love the way you discussed roaches, believe it or not, because these are... you know, is anybody into insects? We have a few people out there. Are you people into insects? No, of course not.
No,
did anybody have to do an insect collection in school?
Does anybody believe there are 5-inch roaches?
Yeah, I do. They're as big as a Buick. They live in the state.
Out.
Absolutely.
Nobody believed me.
Let me tell you about insects. They are really overrated. Most people had an insect collection in high school. Were you? Or in junior high?
No, I didn't.
You see, apparently, I went to the only place that required you to have an insect collection, and it's a really wild story because I didn't want to kill an insect, and also I have allergies. I've got asthma, so I have this net, right? And I'm wheezing, and I'm sneezing, and I'm armed with my Primatene Mist going into the woods trying to capture insects, and that's what I think about. They almost killed me just trying to get this collection, but it was a great, great story, Ariana. It really was. I love the way that you address love, and it's always, it's not always wonderful, the way that you describe it. It oftentimes hurts, but as far as I'm concerned, you always make it undeniably memorable, really. Beautiful, beautiful story. Thank you. What is the message that you'd like us to take away from this story? There's a lot of stuff going on.
I'm thinking that I read yesterday in Facebook, there's no dark side to the moon. There's just a side you can't see. And traveling in foreign territory can sometimes reveal aspects of us that we never thought existed. It reveals us to ourselves.
Reveals it to ourselves. Mm. What did it reveal to you?
It revealed to me, I was a flower child,
right,
you know, a submitted flower child.
I got it. You're north of middle age. I know. We got it. We're all flower children here. We're all kind of hippie-ish, yeah, but you're a flower child.
And I became the Incredible Hulk in one easy feeling.
Really?
Yeah.
That's what you think. All right. Fair enough. You know, stories really do define us because they force us to dig deep. But, Nicole, that's absolutely no reason to dig deep to find the best darn storytelling group in the state, which is our sponsor, the Houston Storytellers Guild. Isn't that right?
Absolutely.
Well, tell us about it. Tell us about it.
Well, before I tell you about it, first I would like to give a big, big, big thank you to Jim from Kingwood for his generous donation. He just gave us a call. So thank you, Jim.
Jim from
Kingwood.
Kingwood.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I know people who take flights out there. That's a long way from here, isn't it?
A long, long way. Absolutely.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you, thank you, thank you. You know, and we didn't even have a show on Summer Sizzle Night. I mean, we kind of did an impromptu one, so this is pretty impressive stuff.
Very impressive.
Thank you so much. And thank you, Nicole, for making that happen. So tell us about the Guild.
Absolutely. Well, how right you are. The Guild meets the fourth Tuesday of the month from 7 to 8:30 p.m. And due to the recent fire at the Printing Museum, the locations of the meetings can be found at www.houstonstorytellers.org. And be sure to follow us on So What's Your Story Facebook page to get the scoop on our guests and events in Houston storytelling. And please, remember, like us on your way out.
You bet. Thanks again, Nicole. You know, the Guild is scheduled to be back at the Printing Museum in September. Next week, Greg Audell will be hosting our very own longtime engineer, Jacob Reiner. Jake's insight on being a veteran were indispensable at times, and Greg is going to be handling him the proverbial story floor next week, right here on So What's Your Story, where tonight you are enjoying guest storyteller Ariana Rose, only on KPFT Pacifica 90.1 FM, Houston. Ariana, your story tonight had considerable range, and I know that you do things at the Moth, and Greg does, and I do, and one of the things that is always interesting to talk about, and our listeners who want to learn about storytelling want to know about this as well, but what is your strategy when designing a 5 to 6 minute story at the Moth? Tonight you gave one about 10 or 11 minutes, but what do you do when you have to give a really short one?
I tell the story, I tell myself the story 5 times, and every time I eliminate everything that is not necessary until it's condensed. And then something very, very important, I never use the word of the theme, but I convey it in every way possible.
Beautiful. Great idea. And I do a similar thing. I know Greg does too. You know, it's very difficult to condense these stories, but I get a lot of emails from listeners asking, you know, what do you do when you have only 2 or 3 minutes or 4 minutes to tell a story? And I give them the same advice that you do, but I also suggest that they start with the conflict. Start with something that kind of gets you right into the plot. So rather than saying something like, I heard the door, I went up, I answered it, the person said, hi, I'm your father, and I said, no, you're not, I don't have one, I might recommend that you start the story with, there was a knock at the door, I answered it, and the guy said, I'm your dad. And I said, no, you're not, I don't have one. Right? Mm-hmm. So I might just get to the conflict a little bit faster. But yeah, getting rid of all of the things that you really don't need is obviously one way to do that. What inspired you the first time just to get up there and tell a story at the Moth?
It was actually Chris and Harwood that inspired me.
And they're going to be here in a few weeks.
Yes, that's right. Two great storytellers. Fabulous. I love them, and they inspired me to go forward, and I was very nervous, and thanks to them, I took the first step.
You know, stories, as you know, they really do evoke a response, and you do this better than most anybody I know. You really get people to feel things when you tell a story. We're human, we're alive, and we feel things, and I wanted to let you know, and I've already told you this, but I really appreciated your compassionate remarks to me after I told the story about my Father's Day with my son, and that meant a lot to me. Mm-hmm. The story connected with you, and I know that you told me about your dad. He's no longer with us. Mm. Describe him to us.
Oh, he was a very dramatic and intense storyteller. Yeah. And his inspiration in times of my downfall gave me the strength to stand and go forward. And most of all, I think I owe him my capacity to express emotion.
Beautiful.
And for that, I'm grateful.
Yeah. And I hope you don't mind me asking you to describe him, because I know that he was apparently very, very close to you, right?
Yes.
Yeah. That's beautiful. Mm. You have a favorite fairy tale character?
The Ugly Duckling.
The Ugly Duckling.
Yeah, I relate totally. Why? I used to be the Ugly Duckling.
Give me a break.
Oh, yeah, my family. Right. Yeah, wait, my mother and my aunt used to fight.
Oh, stop lying to us.
They used to fight because they had no hope.
Really?
They had no hope for me. My mother just had no hope for me. And my aunt would say, just wait until she becomes a teenager. Uh-huh. And she was right. I became the beautiful swan.
We always return to great stories. After all, there's a reason the Cat in the Hat came back, right? And we return to great storytellers like Ariana Rose. Thank you, Ariana.
Thank you
for your skill.
Having me.
Oh, this was great. Your depth, and as I said at the beginning of tonight's program, for your authenticity.
Thanks.
I hope you keep coming back. Unlike the metamorphosis
bye-bye,
that occurs to a butterfly or a frog or an ugly duckling, right? Telling a story will probably not dramatically alter your character, physical structure, or even circumstances, but as a storyteller, you can imagine it did. Scooter is up next with the Inner Side. Complete the backside of this Power Hour on KPFT. Make 90.1 a part of every day. And while you're driving home, turning in for the night, or just chilling, join us every Thursday at 10 for So What's Your Story and ease into the weekend right. You keep loving a great story, and we're going to keep bringing them to you. Be good to each other. Dr. Hank, along with the fabulous team on So What's Your Story, and we are begging you to remember that it is never too late to live happily ever after. Peace.
In small d, who are these people who want to undermine the middle class?
great job.
They often call themselves conservatives.
What'd you think?
But those people are not true conservatives. They don't want to conserve or protect the America the founders
really?
Gave us.
Thank you.
I call them con.
And you can keep
because they're con.
T in partnership with many of our restaurant friends has initiated the KPFT foodie card. KPFT members will get this card sent to them with each donation, or you can pick one up at the station. Present the card when you dine out at any of our participating restaurants, such as Pat Greer's Kitchen,